With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
It is Tuesday, aka Joe Allen Appreciation Day. You are listening to the front three with me, Adam Boltwood, Bowie McBewison.
Yes, I am back.
And Lawrence McKenna.
I think he was saying Boo-Earns.
Oh, my mistake. My mistake. How are we, gentlemen?
Better than Ukraine.
Yes. Poor old Ukraine. What a night, guys. What a night in the Euros.
Late
the
December,
biggest result
back in 60.
Has to be Croatia beating Spain, guys, leaving Spain on the route of death. They've got Italy now in the round of 16, and it's all because, like Roy Hodgson, they gambled. Lots of changes. Oh, no, wait. He played his strongest 11. Still didn't work out, Dave. What happened?
Well, no, Luka Modric wasn't even playing for Croatia. It was mental.
But and Luka Modric did have an influence on the game, though, didn't he?
Yeah, from the touchline.
Did you see that? The thing
no, which influenced.
So, did you see, you know, when Ramos was taking the penalty, which most people thought wasn't a penalty anyway, but when he was taking the penalty, one of the players is looking over to the sideline, he's looking over to the bench, and he's taking instruction as to which way to dive, from Luka Modric. Then runs over to the goalkeeper, whispers in the goalkeeper's ear, and the goalkeeper happens to save Sergio Ramos's penalty from about a foot away from the ball.
Yeah,
it shouldn't have been a penalty. Why was Ramos taking it? The goalkeeper's 3 yards off his line. Why was Ramos taking that penalty? I can understand. He's not. He's obviously not a renowned penalty taker. Is he?
Confidence. And the thing is, he also has blemishes on his record, doesn't he? It's not like he's a sort of
He'll never take one again.
Well, I mean, I suppose he wants to sort of redeem himself. But that's two Real Madrid players that have missed it now in the tournament.
Did Croatia deserve to win, Dave? That's what I want to know.
Yeah, 100,000,000%. They were excellent tonight, I thought. They played very well. I think the change bringing Nolito off was very silly. The only player giving Spain some natural width. I mean, as soon as he went off, Spain went so narrow. They needed to make a change at that point because Croatia had just sort of taken the initiative in the game. He needed to do something, but I felt that was the wrong mistake because it just gave Croatia, you know, more confidence going forward. The fullbacks could get further forward and attack, but it was just a really good performance from Croatia all round. Even Perisic was absolutely fantastic in the game. Phenomenal performance, the goal and the assist, but he was just so good at attacking Spain how they don't like it, you know, dribbling at them, going at them, going left, going right, going inside, going outside. It's just a really good performance. I was quite impressed by Pedro on the other side, Fajer, whatever you call him. Mm-hmm. P-J-C-A-C-A. He was excellent with the ball at his feet as well. You know, defensively was really good. Track back against Jordi Alba, which is a pretty mean feat considering how good he is going forward. But it just felt like a very workmanlike Croatian performance with something at the end of it. I'm not a massive fan of Mario Mandzukic, and I think today Kalinic is put himself forward there. You know, he also got a goal and assist in the game. Scored the goal that he scored to equalise was brilliant, lovely outside of the foot finish from a Perisic cross. But yeah, I think there's going to be a lot of questions now for Mario Mandzukic to get back into that side.
A lot of question marks for Spain as well, Lawrence, because I mean just a few days ago we were talking about how they took it up a gear, beat and admittedly, you know, a Turkey team who aren't world beaters in and of themselves, but still we're talking about the Spain team as being the best team we've seen in the tournament so far. Now they're on the route of death.
Well, they definitely are on the route of death. It sounds like you're on the route to death there, Adam, with your washing machine.
That's just the washing machine, mate.
Yeah, But I mean, in many ways, they've been put in the tumble dryer as well, haven't they? And hung out by Croatia.
Very good.
They've had their world rocked, Adam, because people thought these guys are untouchable. You know, they hadn't lost in such a long time. You know, like I'm sure Dave will tell you. And I think essentially they are still the team to beat at the tournament. You know, it still stands that they were complacent, and essentially they allowed Croatia into this position as much as Croatia played their way into it. You know, they were very sort of laissez-faire, if you like. I really enjoyed the early David De Gea mistake, which allowed... Who was it? Was it Rakitic to try and chip it?
Yeah, Rakitic.
And then obviously Sergio Ramos's mistake as well. So I still feel like there's elements that Spain could improve on. But, I mean, Dave, worrying that David De Gea has been beaten at his near post a number of times this season in really critical games as well.
Don't give me that, Lawrence. I think that's one of the first times that he missed with his feet. David De Gea has been excellent with
Felipe Coutinho near post or not?
That was a chip, though. Was that a chip or not, Lawrence? That was not a feet save.
But was it at the near post or not, Dave?
That was a chip. It's a different saving with your feet. The criticism that Glenn Hoddle gave him was completely unfounded and very unfair.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think Glenn Hoddle was...
So you're saying two times that that's happened this season that you can think of where he's been beaten his near post?
No, I was just...
Maybe three. I think someone else hammered one quite high, but I don't think that's a technical issue at all. I just think he got a little bit unlucky today. It was a deflected effort. And I don't feel you can... You know, David De Gea had such a fantastic season that... Two small mistakes in a game doesn't make him a poor goalkeeper. I thought he commanded his area very well. He punched very well. So apart from that, you know, the slight two mistakes, didn't have the worst game in the world, but they weren't mistakes, obviously.
You know, historically, Sergio Ramos has also missed. I think there's a list here. Bayern Munich in 2012 in the Champions League semi-final. Miss was no surprise. Apparently also missed in the Confederations Cup against Brazil. And there's a meme going around online at the moment of Xavi just holding his face even when Sergio Ramos has taken a penalty.
I mean, how do you rate their chances now, Lawrence? Obviously, Italy can only finish top of their group now. So that's made that matchup. Yeah. What do you reckon?
I mean, it's incredibly exciting because I think where Croatia were exciting tonight was between the fullback and the centre back, and like Dave says, that because they were able to run those guys ragged, essentially attacking the fullback area, an area which a couple of teams are quite weak in at this Euros because they don't like their centre backs being run at. You know, maybe France, for instance, and at times Germany, because I don't feel they've fixed that right back problem. And so I'm interested to see what the likes of Eder can do in that sort of position and whether, you know, Spain are going to be able to pass their way around a really fluid Italian formation with three at the back who, you know, I mean, you know, how are you supposed to get past BBC? I mean, I'm serious, though. I mean, you know, we saw there was some, basically it was some lax defending which allowed Spain to score against Turkey. As much as it was beautiful, you know, I don't think you're going to get that. Are you really realistically going to get the same ball slipped in that Silva was allowed for the first goal?
I don't think so. I think that was a bit of a technical issue from Jedvaj. It was, you know, kind of completely blindsided him. Someone that usually plays fullback for Leverkusen, usually right back. So it's just I think that was a, you know, something that could have been avoided maybe if they were playing Vida, their other centre half. But unfortunately, lads, I found out today that I'm allergic to tennis equipment. I've got Rakitic.
Oh, God.
Wow. Seamless as well.
And that's where we're going to finish the
right
podcast.
Drop it in.
That's where we finish. We're done for the day.
Doesn't get any better than that, does it?
There's no way to go up here and talk about Germany winning or Poland winning. It's just bloody awful.
Rakitic.
Move on, Adam.
Very good, Dave.
Before I get smack a bit.
It means Spain, Italy, England, Germany, and France, all on the same side of the draw. On the other side, Lawrence mentioned earlier, Group F are over there. Wales and Belgium. Wales are going to win the Euros. I think we can all agree right now. They're going to get to the final, right?
Easy. Simple route, isn't it? Just beat Poland. And then they're through, really.
Turkey didn't do enough to ensure Northern Ireland didn't go through. Turkey had to score four goals, I believe, Only managed two against the Czech Republic. Did any of you guys manage to catch that game?
Yeah, but, you know... I don't I don't feel like that was ever going to be something realistic for Turkey. Realistically, it wasn't, was it?
I see when they got those two goals, you know, it's like, hang on, they could do it.
Well, the thing is, I mean, we think it's bad for Turkey. Imagine being Czech Republic.
Yeah. Mm. What about Northern Ireland, Germany? And obviously, Mario Gomez scored, Dave. I knew that made you very, very happy. Indeed, I'm sure you've been playing that song to yourself all afternoon, no doubt. But perhaps more importantly, Northern Ireland are through. Now, after tonight's results, they're through to the round of 16. A massive achievement today. He's getting the song, isn't he? Is he getting the song? Or is he looking at more jokes?
I bet he's getting the song.
No!
Dave, you missed your chance.
Through my headphones.
You can't go two crap songs. You can't go two really awful things back to back. You can't tell the Rakitic joke and then go, Manny, I'm going, man.
Was the Rakitic goal funny or not, Lawrence McKenna? Yeah.
Was the Rakitic... It wasn't funny, Dave.
It was very funny.
I groaned slightly, I must say. But in an amused...
There it is. Yeah.
Remix, Dave. Is that remix?
Yes, Remix 2K16, bud.
Oh, neat. Mate, what's your DJ name?
DOB on the MIC.
Date of birth on the mic.
You said that too quick for it to not be true, so it must be true.
I'm sure he said it before when he's been rapping over, like, a house or a garage beat. Is DOB on the MIC?
Mario Gomez scored, Dave, but Northern Ireland are through.
They are, the lads. Will Griggs has definitely been on fire at this Euros. Those 12 goals that he scored them to get them through the group stage has been impressive.
He's been great on the sidelines, I'll give him that. And
yeah,
it's definitely a shame that, again, Vardy has been slipped into that, where people are saying, Vardy is on fire.
That was all they sang in St. Etienne yesterday. It was that on repeat. And what's the other one? Don't take me home. In a weird Northern accent.
It's not a great song.
What I never get is that people use the line, I just don't think you understand. And you're a little bit like, no, I've got great comprehension of this and I still want to take you home. did anyone see
I just don't want to go to work, they say.
I want to stay here drinking all your beer.
Please don't take me home.
Yeah.
Anyway, it's that Jamie Vardy song, and then "Fuck Off Europe." We're all voting out. That one had a lot less.
Are you joking? Voice behind it. No,
that one had a lot less voice behind it. I've got to say, compared to the other two, so it was a little bit quiet. That one, not in the stadium.
It was alone.
In St. Etienne itself, that song came out quite a few times. Not quite as popular, that one. So anyway, Northern Ireland are through. They reached the knockout stage of a major tournament for just the third time in their history. Better goal difference than Albania and Turkey. A massive achievement. They finished the group on 3 points, essentially. So well done to Northern Ireland. I think we can all give them a round of applause. That's something I massively appreciate.
Correct.
Germany, though. Dave, obviously Mario Gomez scoring, which obviously, as I said, makes you very happy. Mm. Were you impressed by their performance? Because people have not been impressed by the way the Mannschaft have performed so far.
I think they're still finding their feet in the way. They're still finding this system, obviously dropping the false nine in Mario Götze and bringing in a true number nine in Mario Gomez. I think that's a big positive for them. You know, one, it opens up space for Thomas Müller, who had a pretty decent game today, playing that role, you know, investigating the space that sort of opens up for him. But I feel that they've got to stick with this number nine. I feel that it pulls everyone further forward. You know, Toni Kroos will get more space to dictate from deep. I just think it's a better move from Joachim Löw altogether to play a true number nine that is going to stretch people. He had a number of chances, though. Mario Gomez probably should have scored a hat-trick today. But, you know, maybe it's match fitness, but, you know, he hadn't really played that many minutes before, only his substitute appearance so far in the Euros before today. So I think the Germany team will just hit some steam. But again, like we mentioned before, they've got the hard side of the group. So if they do beat whoever is third place in Group A, B or F, they will come up against Italy or Spain in the quarterfinals. So they have a long way to go. And then if they win that, they'll probably come up against either England or France.
Ooh,
So that is going to be such a tough side of the tournament.
The route of death. It's no joke. It is no joke.
One tough side and one sort of relatively easy side.
Yeah, I mean, seeing these results from tonight, seeing the way it's going, I mean, do we feel even more aggrieved over what happened in St Etienne last night, or have we made our peace with it?
I mean, I don't feel aggrieved at it. I feel aggrieved if there was something terrible that had happened, but you know, those guys deserved it. They didn't play well enough on that night, and they've made it harder for themselves.
But in terms of, you know, all the criticism Roy Hodgson's getting for gambling, as everyone says, making those changes, do we feel it's a massive negative now that
changes did Roy Hodgson make that people aren't happy with? Weren't happy with pre-match?
Pre-match, they weren't happy with bringing Jack Wilshere in. I think it was more pre-match, it was the amount of changes. Everyone was like, oh, hang on, we just won that Wales match, bit of momentum, you know, we just won a match, everyone's feeling good. And to make that many changes, everyone's like, oh, is it going to kill the momentum? Obviously, when they laboured yesterday, now it's, oh, the gamble didn't pay off. We're now on the tough side of the draw, the route of death, as I said. Of course, you have to face these teams anyway, but everyone's annoyed that we didn't play the strongest team and therefore go through. Now, of course, it's not 100% that even if we'd have played the strongest team, we'd have gone through to the other end of the draw. As you can see with Spain tonight, playing the strongest team, it didn't quite work out for them. But people seem very upset that we're facing tougher teams, essentially.
Yeah, I think it's ridiculous, though, because both those sides were strong enough to beat Slovakia. And at the same time, a lot of people were calling for Wilshere to be in the side, and they were calling for Sturridge and Vardy to start the previous game. Klein is not so much weaker than Walker. And in midfield, I think the only real change, which maybe people could have complained a bit about, would have been Jordan Henderson. I mean, that would really be the only part.
I was taking off Rooney, though, wasn't it? Bringing on Wilshere and Henderson, taking off Rooney, Bertrand. Although Nathaniel Klein, you're right, he looked an able sort of backup for Kyle Walker. I don't think the same can quite be said for Ryan Bertrand.
I still think Klein was good enough. I still think, whether England fielded what we consider to be the strongest strong team or they fielded that side, I still think that England should be beating a side like Slovakia in that situation. And that's not even speaking
they
of
may run into
a,
the
a biased six. Situation. I mean, you know, they essentially, I think either way England should be beating. And I think it comes down to a lot more than just what Roy's done.
Just those changes. Interesting. What do you think, Dave?
Yeah, actually, it was poor. Sort of what we said about yesterday in terms of the Henderson, the Wilshere. It's not good enough. And speaking to people today, people thought that Jordan Henderson played well. I thought he was absolutely awful yesterday. Didn't do enough in the final third. Didn't offer.
That's really dividing opinion.
Yeah, it really is. It's quite an interesting one. You know, well, maybe we should ask what the listeners think about Jordan Henderson's performance against Slovakia, because it is definitely 50-50. I just didn't think he did enough with the ball. Being in central midfield, he didn't command anything. I just felt the game passed him by. It really did. And for a player like Jordan Henderson, that technically is coming into the peak of his career, needs to do a little bit more on that stage.
After last night, and as we said, England on the route of death, along with Spain, Italy, Germany, and France, I should say. Looking ahead to tomorrow's fixtures, as the tournament starts to take shape into those knockout rounds,
we've got Adam, buddy. What? You missed Poland, Ukraine.
Oh,
that was
sorry,
the game I watched at 5 o'clock. I wasted 90 minutes of my life.
Sorry.
Dave, just because you don't get to talk
Ukraine,
about it doesn't mean you
Dave.
Didn't.
Ready, Dave? Ukraine, ready. Neil, Poland 1. Blaszczykowski, sealed second spot. Go.
Blaszczykowski scored a great goal. Excellent goal. An assist from Milik, who had another wonderful game, created the most chances on the pitch. But overall, the Ukraine were a bit better than Poland in this one. It was Ukraine dominated the ball. Yarmolenko had a number of chances he probably should have put away, but it sort of felt like a very Ukrainian European 2016 performance where they just had the chances, didn't take them, and then ultimately got beat. Poland defended well. Pazdan again was brilliant. Krajovac again covered his back four in lots of glory. Again, it was a different Poland side. Obviously, Blaszczykowski came off the bench. Piszczek was rested. So that right side that is probably one of the best qualities wasn't there from the start. So the change had to be made. He came on and he made a big impact. But again, Lewandowski was poor. Hasn't had a shot on target yet at the Euros. It's a weird one. It really is. He should have scored in the first half. Milik put a great ball into the penalty area, but a great cross with his left foot. 3-4 yards out, Lewandowski ballooned it over. So I feel that, I don't know what's going on with Lewandowski. It just feels like he's just not hitting the ball, or not. It doesn't look very confident in a way. You know, he wasn't bringing anyone to play like we know Lewandowski can do. So it's a bit of a worry for Poland going to the last stage, because they did look a little bit toothless with Lewandowski playing so poorly. There's another moment in the second half where I think it was a 5-on-4 break for Poland, and he went for the spectacular through ball to, I think it was Kaputska, a very difficult pass, and he didn't pull it off. Whereas he had like one man inside, one man to the left of him. They could have played a simple pass to him and then got the move going on. So don't know whether he's trying a little bit too hard, and he just needs to chill out a bit.
You don't regret watching the game, though, do you, Dave?
Say again, sorry.
You enjoyed watching the game, though, right?
Yeah, it was all right in spells. It was a bit dull towards the end of the first half and then start of the second half. But apart from that, yeah, it was a decent bit of football. The goal was brilliant. Lovely, lovely move from Kuba.
Last point on today's games. Why was one of you tweeting me at awkward when Mario Gomez scored?
Don't know, mate.
Interesting.
Don't know. Or just awkward, really, that you didn't back him for the tournament and someone else on the podcast did, really. And that you were so vehement.
Back him for the tournament.
So I vehement in your anti. Really, you're anti
Gomez.
Gomez.
He needs to go home.
You said it's anti Gomez. Yeah, you're anti Gomez propaganda.
Anti Gomez.
I was more doubtful, and I made a bet which I won, and I've yet to see the rewards from Dave.
Yeah, he's going to be too busy gallivanting around the world to Saint-Étienne, aren't you?
And you told me that Mario Gomez was going to light up the tournament. Those were your words.
And when he's on the pitch, he started
today.
He started today, Adam.
There you have it.
Speaking of you gallivanting around tomorrow's. The world, though, Adam, how was your France experience?
Oh, it was great. Great fun. Thank you to Roy Jennings of the Chelsea fans shout, give me a spare ticket. Great atmosphere, I'd say. Being in St Etienne, England fans completely took over. Wonderful being there, to be amongst it. The game, of course, was not quite what everyone was hoping for, but you know, in the stadium, the support was incredible. There was sort of a bizarre, I'd say, 10 to 15 minute never ending great escape England chant, you know, England, and it never stopped. Like it went on for 15 minutes. Wow. And it got, you know, there was, it started to get, you know, more rousing when they went towards the penalty box. You think, oh, it's over after a chance was missed. No, it just started up again, never ending. So the support itself was fantastic. It was pretty much all England fans in there. I'd say sort of 70% England fans in the stadium. Wonderful stadium as well. Shame they sell 0.5% beer in there, but less about that, the better. And yeah, very nice experience altogether. I've also got to give a shout out to a guy called Mike. Me and Roy were staying in, let's call it a basic accommodation out in Saint Etienne. And this morning we come downstairs, we're doing all the, you know, the boring reception stuff, handing in the keys and what have you. Hear a little gasp behind us. You know, some guy sitting there, and he's like, "Are you Rory Jennings from the Chelsea fans?" Rory's like, "You know, playing up the school. You know, I'm acting like my ego's not bruised." And then he goes, "Are you Adam Boltwood from the Front Free podcast?" I was like, oh, you know,
no way.
It's embarrassing that, you know. I was like, oh, you know, thanks so much for listening. He's like, oh, you know, big fan or whatever. I was like, oh, listen to the podcast tonight. I said, just listen tonight. So this guy, this poor kid, is sitting there in reception. I didn't want to say to him, you know, oh, you know, basically, you know, you look like shit right now. He'd been sitting there in reception, looked very uncomfortable, looked very tired. So it turned out, sitting there, I thought he was checking out like us. No. Made a bit of an error. Him and his mates, who were from Hong Kong, unbelievably, had come over for the Euros, made a small error. They'd booked for July 20th instead of June 20th.
We've all done it.
In basic accommodation. So they basically slept in the hallway of the hotel. The poor guys. And managed to get themselves inside this morning to get on the very uncomfortable looking wicker furniture. So we're just getting a little moment's rest before they headed off. But he managed to look excited when he saw more Rory than me. But Mike, thanks so much for listening. Wonderful to meet you this morning. Sorry that your stay didn't quite work out as you'd hoped with the accommodation there.
If you'd have seen him the night before, would you have invited him to come and, you know, spoon?
No, because I was pretty much spooning Rory as it was. Okay, we were in one bed.
You were the big spoon.
We thought we were in separate beds. It would have been a bit tight, but I might have said, you know, here's some pillows.
Come and sleep on the floor. Oh, you are too kind.
There's the bar. The baths are very comfortable if you need to sleep in them.
If you if you get drunk enough, they definitely are, yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But altogether, wonderful experience, despite the on-the-pitch stuff. I'd say. But hopefully, you know, in the next round, if who's it look like we're going to get? Portugal, Austria?
Looks most likely Hungary.
Probably Hungary, yeah.
I think, you know, that's okay. Maybe then in the next round, when we inevitably go out to France and everyone starts getting very annoyed, then we might look back at that result as even more of a problem. But at the moment, I'm not going to get too upset. On to tomorrow, though, guys. There's some big fixtures. Italy are playing the Republic of Ireland. Ireland need to win this one. Italy, of course, you know, it's almost a dead rubber for them. They're finishing first in this group. Conte expected to rest players, to rotate his squad. The question is, with that in mind, do Ireland have a chance, Lawrence?
I mean, Ireland are always going to have a chance, but especially against a defensive side like this, I feel like with the impetus on Italy, we're going to see quite a different game. I'm looking forward to seeing how Italy do when Ireland sit back and sort of say, right, let's counter-attack on these guys. What can Long do? What can the likes of those guys do against... It probably won't be BBC, will it? Because how many of them are on cards?
Both Bonucci and Barzagli, I think, got booked. No, sorry, Chiellini and Bonucci got booked in the game against Belgium.
So it'll just be
sure.
It'll just be another B, and then maybe two people subbing in to sort of give them the full chance of being able to play BBC against Spain, which gives
so you've got
Ogbonna, yeah,
Ogbonna and Darmian, maybe.
I mean, I like my chances more against ODB than BBC.
Sweden v Belgium could be Zlatan's last ever game, Dave. For Sweden.
Yeah, and he's gonna bag a hat-trick, mate. Sweden 3, Belgium 0.
Really?
I feel like I need to stick a 5 on this now.
Dave, why?
I feel that Sweden will be very ugly. They're just hard to beat, Sweden. They're just a bit like, they're difficult. And I feel like Zlatan hasn't really done anything yet in this tournament, really, apart from the assist for the own goal that Republic of Ireland scored. I just feel that there's something coming from him. Like, there's Zlatan is...
They secure
their
place. Surely they're going to... After they ran rampant against Ireland, they're going to do what needs to be done.
Yeah, I think Belgium, they still inherently have a few issues, especially in their transition. And that's something that this Swedish side, if they do fancy it, could, you know, could really put some fire in their belly in a way and go out there and score some goals.
Right, yes.
I think Belgium have got this one. What about Hungary, Portugal? Ronaldo and Portugal failing to really perform so far, Lawrence. Are we expecting a better showing this time?
Yeah, I mean, but against an informed Hungary. Hungary side who I think are top of their group, aren't they? Mainly because Portugal have fallen away, but still. And a side who, in the very beginning of the tournament, looked as if they were seriously going to top this group. I mean, yeah. In fact, I find them top of the group ahead of Iceland. I still think it could go Hungary, Iceland, Portugal, Austria. And that would mean that Portugal and Austria both drop out.
My God.
Good God. I mean, look at Hungary so far. I mean, they got the draw against Iceland and then the win against Austria. Granted, everything went wrong for those guys. But I feel like if they frustrate Portugal for long enough, then we'll see the result in Hungary's favour. The only difference here is that I think Ronaldo realises that his team could go out here. I think he's going to have to change his ways in order to get into the next round, and I don't think the focus should just be on him. You really need to make sure that from set pieces, they make the most of those sorts of things, because they haven't been doing that so far. All it's been going through Ronaldo, and I sort of want to see what can happen basically when he shares the responsibility a little bit.
Hungary only need a point to be sure of reaching the knockout phase.
Yeah.
So I think that's looking good. What about Iceland, Austria? Dave, who do you reckon is coming out on top on this one?
I'm going to go nilers. Nil-nil. I don't think it's going to be the greatest of games that we've ever seen in an international tournament. Yeah, you can just see them just sort of seeing the competition out, both those sides. You know, Iceland do lack a little bit of quality in the final third. And this Austrian team has just flopped like the dark horse that they were predicted to be at the start of the tournament. I think that Portugal will win this group. Hungary second.
Wow.
Iceland, Austria. That's what I'm going to go with.
Does that result mean Turkey can still get through, right?
Yeah, Turkey can still get through. Yeah, they've got the 3 points. So they sit on equal points with Albania and Northern Ireland. They have a worse difference than Northern Ireland, so Northern Ireland are going through now, and Albania and Turkey are both on -2. So depending on what happens in groups E and F, with Sweden on 1 point, Ireland on 1 point, and then Portugal and Austria on 1 point. So basically, both Turkey and Albania pretty much need Belgium, Italy to win, and either Iceland or Portugal and Hungary to win to get them through to the next round. All the draws, obviously, will also mean that.
There's all the permutations there from Squawk Dave.
True say.
We finish up.
Couldn't Nolito go to Man City? Is that not news that's sort of related?
He is close to signing for £13.8 million. And you know it's true because it's in The Guardian, which is actually pretty reputable.
Raul Morelos could be on his way to Bournemouth.
What? I didn't even know that. That's pretty seismic, I think is the only word.
Haven't also Leicester been turning down lots of offers for Troy Deeney?
Now, this is the bit I wanted to come on to, guys.
Oh, okay.
Leicester City have apparently made a £30 million bid for Troy Deeney. And I heard Dave's little laugh there. Now, what do you think about this? Because we've been debating about this and St. Etienne among Indian fans. The world's gone mad. You know, all this sort of stuff. £30 million. At the same time, some people come in and saying, these guys have got stacks of money. Of course, Watford aren't going to sell. Of course, Leicester have got this money to burn. Is it such a bad thing that players like Troy Deeney go £30 million? Or is this a uniquely Premier League problem, essentially?
Could it be that they're clubbing some of their money together from the TV deal and what they're anticipating Jamie Vardy to make them?
Doesn't look like he's going anymore.
Sure, it doesn't.
All reports, Arsene Wenger's come out and said, as far as I know, he's staying. That's the murmurings going around. Of course, nothing confirmed. It could be the influx of cash from Vardy's sale, but at the same time, still, 30 million for Troy Deeney, who I think it's fair to say is no spring chicken, not necessarily a world beater, not even an international player, though Dave.
Why would you spend that on him?
Exactly. Now, what I'm trying to do is say, is it such a bad thing, essentially? People saying 30 million is ridiculous amount of money spent on Troy Deeney. Do we need to almost adjust our barometer of how we judge transfers, because there's so much money in the Premier League, even for clubs like Watford and Leicester now?
Or is it
still just ridiculous?
I think that Leicester City should get their league title should be revoked. Bidding 30 million for Troy Deeney at any time is absolutely insane.
That would be like buying Di Maria for 60 and then selling him the next season.
Well, no, because Di Maria won the Champions League, Lawrence. Troy Deeney has won the championship. He's a good player, yes, but he's not worth £30 million.
He's definitely not. Especially not considering there's better value out there than Troy Deeney. This is what interesting is, maybe, you know, people talk about Moneyball, but people also talk about crunching the numbers for other players. Moneyball is one form of crunching the numbers, and it tends to be people think it's just crunching the numbers to get value at a low end. Maybe people crunch the numbers and believe that Mr. Deeney is worth the 30 million.
Maybe.
It does seem a weird one. They apparently bid $15 million for Michael Keane as well.
Mental.
It seems bizarre, but maybe this is the new normal now in the Premier League. You spend £30 million on I think he's 28. Is he 27, 28? And 30-year-old striker. It seems pretty incredible. He would become potentially the third most expensive Englishman of all time. More expensive than Rio, Luke Shaw, Wayne Rooney. That's quite something. It's quite something if it does come off. I'll say that much.
Well, I mean, rumours were today that Liverpool were bidding for Andros Townsend. So, you know,
wow,
the world
really
has
that
gone
one.
Mad.
Yeah, it has. How much was there a price on that one?
I don't think I saw the figure. But apparently, they're interested in bidding for him. So that's definitely that's interesting, isn't it?
What about on a less crazy one? Victor Wanyama. Looks like he's off to Spurs.
We kind of discussed this a little bit yesterday, but how do you feel about it as a Spurs fan, him arriving at the club? I mean, it's a great deal.
I think so, yeah. 11 million, this one. So slightly less ridiculous. And I think it's a sort of play we need. Eric Dier, sort of now, you know, he's become incredibly, he's become essential for club and country now in that sort of holding midfield role. You obviously need backup and someone you can rotate in that position with the Champions League coming in. Someone who can also sort of, you know, be tough in midfield alongside Moussa Dembele, who we desperately missed last season. So I'm very happy. I'd rather have him for 11 than Deeney for 30. I think I'll say that much.
I mean, I agree. I also think it would be great if England could remain in the tournament, because that'll probably help Brexit.
Yeah. Vote Remain.
Because the long, yeah, I mean, that's the difference, isn't it? Is that as long as all those guys who are out in France singing about, you know, I just don't think you understand, etc. They're also the ones who are like, fuck you, we're voting out. Yeah. And you're like, ah, but are you? Because you're in France. Unless you got a really good postal vote, you, my friends, are in trouble.
Yeah.
Suck on that, you dickheads.
Yeah. So, I mean, you know, that's interesting.
A few of them have. Done some forward thinking. I'll say that much for them. They've apparently done their postal votes, so there you go.
Were you out there doing a straw poll? Hey guys, who here's done?
No, just
guys, I just want to check if we're going to be
just
chanting. If ever all of us are going to chant this, how many of you actually have done a postal vote here? Because there's a great chance.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
So England may actually remain in, and we all need to stay, okay?
Oh, little conversation there. Oh, yes. Assume you're voting Brexit, then yeah, already voted, mate. Already voted.
Suddenly, your choice of the name the Football Republic seems a lot more applicable.
Dun, 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 dun. I know.
Yes, very interesting.
Terrible choice. You guys revealed which way you're voting on? It's very emotive. I'm finding even discussing it brings strong opinions, trenchant opinions. I find.
I mean, they do sort of say you're not supposed to discuss your politics, are you? But
yeah, I mean, religion or politics, what is it?
I'm voting in, to be quite honest. I'm remaining. I think that's what everyone should do. And if you don't vote that, you're a little bit stupid. No offence to anyone that's voting out.
I don't think it's time to leave. Let's put it that way. I don't like the bureaucrats in Brussels.
No offence to anyone, but you're stupid. Everyone's entitled to their opinions, Dave. Everyone's entitled.
Yeah, they're stupid opinions, though, Adam, and that's the problem.
My issue with it is I feel like there's I mean, it feels like a bit of a distraction from the real issues. You know, I mean, we look at I come from predominantly media perspective, and you look at the poster behind Farage with all the people openly crossing a border, and you think, unless they're coming from Scotland, no one's walking across a border to get into England. All right.
Just wonder if it seems so. It seems obvious to me that it should be Remain. And like you're saying, when you see Farage say things like this, and it kind of boils down to immigration, you feel, oh, it's kind of missing the point. They're twisting things. They've made it quite an ugly campaign. But is that almost confirmation bias, where everything I'm seeing is just reinforcing what I think? And on the guys on the other side are thinking the exact same thing. Oh, Cameron's scaremongering. Look at him. He doesn't want, you know, the sovereignty, blah, 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 all this sort of stuff.
I don't think either side's dealt with it particularly well, do you? I mean, I feel like there's a lot of people who don't seem to be running their in-house very well. There's a lot of politicians who don't seem to be they don't have very good relations. I think that a good thing is that the press have become independent. But the problem is the press have become independent, and then the bigger issue is they become dependent on the money. So they become independent from the politicians, but become more dependent on the money. And that's where people like, well, sadly, Murdoch and his crew sort of become a little bit more influential. And if, I mean, even weirder is that, you know, if you're outside the UK, you're probably going to have a different view again. So it probably seems almost irrelevant, but it isn't.
Before we finish,
David Cameron Cook might not be Prime Minister if they leave. Let's put it that way. And then we're stuck with Boris Johnson. So another reason to vote is that you definitely don't want to vote Boris Johnson. I mean, you thought Cameron was bad. Just wait.
That's frightening. Before we finish, moving on from the politics briefly, there's just been a little report coming out that the FA, Lawrence, are unsettled by Roy Hodgson's risky team selection against Slovakia. Officials feel wholesale changes were an unnecessary gamble that jeopardised England chances and may have damaged their manager's long-term standing. Roy Hodgson's contract expected to expire after Euro 2016. A few, you know, murmurings and noises coming out from the FA about whether that's going to be extended. I think it was Greg Dykstra came out and said that losing in the semi-finals was a good tournament, essentially. Hodgson said he's got no regrets anyway, Lawrence, but those changes have just gone down badly with the fans, though.
Depends who you lose to, really, though, isn't it? I mean, you know, if you lose to
Hungary?
If you lose to Hungary in the semi-finals, more for you. But if you lose to Spain or someone who eventually goes on to win the competition, then it almost seems fair enough. Leaking this? Who's the one leaking this from inside the camp? Because it seems a lot like it doesn't seem in... I mean, it's in the public's interest, but the way that it's reported is so salacious and so sort of, ooh, we found this out. This undermines Roy's position. Yeah, I mean, clearly. But I mean, why would you want to...
Maybe not someone in the senior-ish position, I don't know.
But why do that at this point? Why go about your politics in this way? There's nothing that represents the FA in a positive light. It clearly shows that there's a sort of a mole in the camp, if you like, because these people are leaking when you need solidarity amongst the players and the playing staff and the public. It's just weird.
It's mad, isn't it, the Euros? You know, like when we're during the season and everything changes week to week and the storylines change and all of a sudden the manager who's a genius last week is a complete failure the next. The Euros is like such a heightened arena, isn't it? It's kind of like every 2 days, Roy Hodgson gone from, whoa, you know, that gamble in the Wales game really paid off. He did really well, you know, with some caveats. Now he's a complete failure. He's getting sacked after the next game. He's taken too many chances, blah, blah, blah. Yeah. It's mad how quickly the narrative, I would say, has changed. More narratives to come, guys. Plenty more narratives to come in the coming days.
Doesn't sound so New York-y today, but Kristen is still in New York, and it is, Kristen, just over an hour until Argentina play the US. Where are they playing?
They're playing Houston, Texas.
Houston, Texas. So a pretty hostile environment for the Argentinians.
It'll be a home game for the US, obviously, with it being on American soil. But that, I think in a lot of ways, that's something that's kind of struck me is, You talk about, you know, this being a home tournament for the US. The numbers of fans representing countries like Ecuador and Colombia and such like that have come out, I think highlights the diversity in this country and how it truly is, as it says on the tin, a melting pot culturally. And I think you see heritages and people's ancestries represented very passionately, never more so than when you go to a game and you see it in the stands with the sheer number of people who've come out.
How therefore does that mean you're getting accepted? Because this is what I found quite interesting, having been in the American blogosphere for a little while. It's all about the authenticity of things, isn't it?
It is. My experience has been majority positive. So a lot of people are very friendly and you get to talk. The only difficulty I've faced personally is a linguistic one in terms of not speaking Spanish, and that can be a difficulty with players. I mean, you know, even guys in the Premier League that you maybe hope can speak a little bit, guys like Jeff Montero and Hernan Valencia, they were good enough sports to try with me, but again, it's a bridge you can't always cross. And you know, it's interesting. I had a chat with Jack Harrison, who is a Stoke-on-Trent-born lad who's playing for New York City FC. Mm. And having just done Colombia-Peru the night before, I was really struck about how important it can be to have those little linguistic nuances on your side, in the sense of that was two northern lads talking about football. So instantly it was a lot more relaxed. He didn't really have to listen as intently. I didn't have to choose my words in the question so he could understand.
Yeah.
And I think if there's one takeaway I've had from this on a more personal level, it's that I didn't really need to learn Spanish and quickly with the Gold Cup approaching next year. But I think even with that, you know, I have to give credit to a young chap called Roberto Rojas, who has been nice enough to translate for me in the mix zone. Because they, again, whether you disagree with it or not, they don't provide a translator in the mix zone. They do in press conferences, but not in the mix zone. And Roberto, who speaks both fluently, was kind enough to ask questions on my behalf and then translate them back to me so I had something to write, which, again, I really can't thank him for enough, because it gave me at least some quotes to work with. Because, again, like I said, a lot of these players, they don't think to learn English. Jason Miller, for example, has gone from Colombia to Spain to Italy, so there's been no need for him to learn English. And equally, again, if anything, it probably reflects poorly on me for not being able to speak that second language to begin with.
Mm. What's it been like sort of doing your journalism but in a different place? Because I'd imagine that you're sort of used to, you know, a bit of a, I don't know, I'm trying to work it out. Your day-to-day sort of thing goes on in England, and you know, you, as a journalist, I imagine you sort of get your grind on. But in the States, it's quite different for you.
I'd say it's following the trail behind a few people. So guys like Tim Vickery are probably the best example. These guys who understand every country in depth, the ins, the outs, the politics, etc. I come to it with fresher eyes, in the sense that I don't grasp all of that and haven't been able to understand all of that, because as much reading as I can do, there are things that slip through and slip through underneath that radar and through that net. I think for me, that's maybe where I've tried to come in and maybe see if I can at all give a fresh perspective, because again, it's a similar situation with the leagues that you and I know very well. Sometimes you can get locked into a way of thinking. And because I don't have the history or any prejudices is the wrong word, but preconceptions is perhaps a better way to put it. Preconceptions about these teams and the way they play, I'm judging them on very isolated situations.
I was going to say, do you find yourself sort of slightly changing the way that you approach things? Because the Premier League definitely conditions you as a journalist to think in a certain way and to ask a certain kind of question.
Exactly, because, you know, if we take Sunderland, for example, when I watch a Sam Allardyce team, I can compare them to a Gustavo Poyet team, to a Decanio team, to a Martin O'Neill team even further back. With Peru, the real understanding I have of Peru is they chopped a lot of older, experienced players going to this tournament. It was quite an experimental squad. So I'm looking at this maybe with not the same high expectation of, well, this is a squad that's still being formed, so don't expect mountains to be moved. As a consequence of that, I was left quite impressed by their performance against Colombia, because defensively they were resolute. It was just decision-making in the final third that let them down. It was a pass that was a few seconds too late, or it was the wrong angle or the wrong avenue to slide it down. That's probably not the same evaluation that someone like Tim Vickery has, or someone like Roberto Rojas, who, again, fully is immersed in this culture and understands it. Now, again, I've tried to do as much reading as I can. There are some instances where, excuse me, your knowledge base from Europe fills in gaps for you. So, for example, I just wrote something today on James Rodriguez in Chile, and talking about how Arturo Vidal does symbolise the way that Chile play, that harassing, high-pressure style that, again, saw them really destroy Mexico the other night. I can also understand, from knowing the MLS situation, a little bit of how Mexico is a very political national team, and how Juan Carlos Osorio is too much of a tinker. Little things you pick up, again, I felt during this tournament I've never had the full puzzle. And in some ways that has been difficult sometimes, because I like to feel, when I cover the European stuff and the MLS stuff, I know exactly what I'm talking about. Whereas with this, there's been a little bit more stepping into the dark on the thin ice. You're not sure if it's going to support your ideas and your theories.
Mm.
But that is possible.
There are elements of translation, and I've sort of felt a little bit sorry for Roy Hodgson in the English press, because there are some really, there are some really interesting differences between the way that the English press treat Roy and the way that other people treat him, and especially the way they treat the team. And I just wonder if there's a sort of a parallel to be drawn there, you know, between the almost the languages of football in that sense and the perception, because, L'Equipe have given England players much higher ratings than their own national players. And yet people rate the French team so much further ahead of England. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the perception is very different.
It is. I think there are some lines that run parallel no matter what. The Dunga Brazil is probably my best example for that, in the sense that the evaluations that the South American journalists came to were ones that I found coming to myself, watching the team and seeing them play, and then also understanding things that I'd read and picked up in stories and such like, and reading interviews with players. So there are those where I think, as I say, they run parallel. Equally, there are instances where things diverge a bit, in the sense that to begin with, I was actually quite fond of Juan Carlos Osorio as this tournament began. I thought, you know what, he's trying things, he's being experimental. I kind of like that. I also think that the fact he's not this really eccentric, out there coach, contrasted with Miguel Herrera, who was and you know, famously punched a journalist in an airport, that's good for this national team. It gives them stability. As the Torres, again, I was sitting there thinking, okay, he's experimenting again. That's good. You know, three goalkeepers in four games. It's a little bit out there. But then you watch the Chile game, and by the end of the Chile game, probably even half time, I would argue, I'm thinking, why is he changing so much? Even when they start the game, the lineups are announced, I was thinking, why is he changing it again? He had a really good formation. The need for progress is too much here. His greatest strength is clearly his greatest weakness. And I think when you have those moments of realization, and it's not your beat, as you put, it is beautiful in that sense, because you gain so much confidence from that, because you think, you know what, I've understood this almost on a cellular level here.
Yeah.
I haven't got a predisposition. I haven't been able to read, you know, the Mexican sport papers and record and things like this to gleam everything. And then equally, you do get to immerse yourself in a different culture. Now, again, we live in a computer age. I can translate articles, things like that. You don't get the full understanding of it, of course, the nuance of it. You do get the body of it. So there's little things during the course of this where I've tweeted out front pages or headlines, things like that. To me, that in itself is an enriching experience, because you're growing culturally as well. And sometimes when you've been raised in the Premier League and things like this, I look at guys like Miguel Delaney, for example, who I think is so brilliant in the way he can transition between teams and countries and leagues and still have such unique insight. That for me, in a lot of ways, is what I'm trying to aspire towards, to move towards. And it's been difficult in the sense that I've had two tournaments to wrestle with. So there's been instances where I've talked to you quite candidly about almost feeling kind of burnt out and, you know, am I taking too much in? But then I also think that pressure, that constant, ingesting of football as a game, that has to be improving something. That has to be making something better. And I know we have some young writers who listen to this. I've had a few reach out now and again. I think it is true what they say about the 10,000 hours. You do need to put that in. And, you know, there was a guy emailed me, I think it was just the other day, and I only just managed to get back to him today. And he said about, you know, I really want to try and make it like you have. And I said, honestly, I don't think I have made it, because I'm still not coming.
He's awful. He's awful at his job.
Well, this is the thing. I think there are sometimes I even think I'm coming to the conclusions far later than everyone else. Now, maybe that's just my nature of being a little bit more withdrawn and trying to give things time to sell. But again, I think that's the thing with this tournament, is that it's been a real learning curve and a real testing period, because I've essentially been given free rein. I can write largely what I want.
I've really been thinking about this tournament, because I've got to admit, I've been feeling a little bit left out of Euro 2016. I work a number of jobs, and my only job, you know this, Chris, is not just football. Like I do, I make videos for a living, but you know, a huge earner for me has been football. And so I've been feeling slightly left out of the Euros because I've not really felt all that into it. And I think the trend this Euros is to be the person who was there, but not necessarily the one who was saying the right information. So, you know, Stan Collymore, there have been a number of, there have been some guys who have done some good work, don't get me wrong. You know, I love reading the Jonathan Wilsons out there who can get the overarching narrative, or at least help to sculpt that. And what I am most fascinated about is we do TFR live, so we do the Football Republic live with the games. And kids call in and they say, and I'll say, what do you want to talk about? And so often they'll go, Roy Hodgson isn't very good. And I'll say, why? And they'll go, and you'll sort of think, you know what, there's a lot of opinions being shaped out there by people who are literally on the ground and maybe not observing to the fullest, and they are just saying the first thing that they see. And that's shaping so much of everything else, because it's not, you know, we think the journalists are synthesizing for us and we think they're going through all these processes before they write things on the paper. But essentially this, you know, the thing that you'll take away could be 3 months down the line after the tournament, or even by the time that you get to the next Copa America, that's when you're going to make your conclusions, because you're going to have something else to compare it to. And that's why maybe Tim Vickery is so great, because Tim Vickery was around, you know, long before we were. That's not to sort of put him down, but, you know, in a sense it takes, you know, you were saying you need to put your 10,000 hours in, and I know this is getting a little bit navel-gazy here, you need to put your 10,000 hours in, that doesn't mean you're not anywhere by the time you've done your 5,000 hours.
No, of course not. I think the other thing as well, sometimes it can be about the platform that you have. I mean, you know, we talk in this age about having so many outlets for opinions, and everyone can say what they think. I also think in that regard, it's easier to then collude everyone into one opinion. So like you say, for example, with TFR, people ring in and say, Roy Hodgson isn't very good. When you're surmising an opinion in 140 characters, it can be hard to be actually well-rounded and even deep with it, because, again, it's 140 characters. It's maybe two sentences if you time your wording right and get everything compact. I think that's the other thing as well is, you know, as you say, it sometimes can feel as if it's the wrong people in the right place. And you don't want to sound narcissistic when you say it, because, again, we're all an industry trying to fight for that spot. But I think that's the other issue as well. If you don't feel like you're interacting with the people in your industry, that can be quite a lonely pursuit as well. Sometimes that can be beneficial, I think. It can help you refine your opinions and actually test your opinions.
Yeah, exactly. It gives you a reflection, essentially. Yeah.
But then I also think you can learn great things. So there's a guy who works in Philadelphia called Jonathan Tannenwald, and I'll be surprised if a large majority of our listeners know him, which is to say that I think he's also chronically underrated, because I've been lucky enough now to sit with him a few times and talk soccer in the US and the CONCACAF region as a whole, and even dabble in Copa America. And he's so insightful. And he doesn't just tell you the story as it happens. He tells you sort of the tributaries that flow into the bigger lake in that regard. Mm-hmm. And he is a wonderful storyteller as well. He has a great knack for doing that. And I think, you know, it's the same way that people go on these gap years after university to quote unquote find themselves. When you go abroad completely out of what is your comfort zone, which for me is England, into a city like New York where I've never covered football before. I've been to a Red Bulls game, a New York City FC game, but again, that's in the wheelhouse of MLS. That's something I know and I feel comfortable in. You are going to experience difficulties. You're going to experience things that change your perception. And I would like to think that when I touch down in England next month, I will be better informed for it. I'll have a better understanding. I'll be able to draw more parallels between, say, the way that Roy Hodgson plays and the way that Dunga plays, and the difficulties they both face and the similarities and things like that. So it is a good experience, I must admit. It's ultimately a positive one.
Who have you been enjoying reading during this tournament? And obviously Euros and Copa America. If there's anyone you can recommend that you think gives a good overview or has definitely kept you informed because you're not in Europe for this tournament, who would you go for?
I think for Copa America, Tim Vickery has again, he's really just hit the nail on the head. His pieces have been a mixture of single story arcs where he talks about one team, and then also these more modern styled little point pieces where it's, for example, a semi-final with the three things he thinks will decide the respective semi-finals. For the Euros, again, I would touch on Miguel and say that he wrote a really nice thing about Iniesta. Again, the Euros, I think it's been a bit more difficult for me. I don't know if it's geographic, possibly not, because I am on Twitter as well. There's nothing that's caught my eye consistently, is what I would say from the Euro perspective. Now, that could largely be because I'm dialed into Copa America for the most part and focusing on that. But I think, yeah, there isn't anything. I mean, I don't know about you, but my Euro experience, honestly, has been diving into the less heralded teams. So I found immense pleasure reading about Slovakia and Russia and writing about them. It wasn't entirely in Spain. Even when I did look at the big teams, like Spain, for example, I looked at them in isolation of how were they playing to Alvaro Morata. It wasn't anything wider reaching. I wasn't really focusing on the Pedro situation. It was all just... The best example I can draw is, it's kind of like tapas for me, in the sense that, like, I'm just grabbing little bits of things. It's not one big meal in that sense. I'm going for lots of little different things and receiving chronic abuse for the fact that I predicted Wales would finish bottom of their group.
I mean, I guess that's part of it, isn't it? Is that you can, I mean, you know, we've obviously found the merits of having you on the podcast because you can cover so many different subjects and you're talking to a lot of different people, but it also means that, you know, sometimes someone will come along who has more knowledge of something and sort of go, well, I've got even more to add, or why the hell are you talking about Wales in that way, or whatever it is. I guess that's part of the problem with the internet now, is there. I guess that's it, is actually people need to see the perspective from which you're coming. And I think it's fascinating. You know, it's been very interesting to talk to you on this podcast, especially during the Euros and the Copa, because there aren't many people insightful like you. The thing I'm most interested in, though, Chris, is what the crepe game is like in New York.
It's ridiculous. Again, we've had this debate, you and I, many a time, in terms of you are dialed in on that, and where
I was.
For me, it's a casual observer at best who picks something up and says, oh, that looks nice, or that doesn't look nice, and there's no greater understanding. I find it is art. That's the best way I can put it. So you have Flight Club, which is on, I want to say, 11th Street.
Mm-hmm.
It seems about right.
Pretty much everyone. If you're interested in trainers, and that's what crepes are, you probably know that, then you will know what Flight Club is.
And, you know, you go in there, and if I can compare it to, like, say, JD Sports in England... The way everything is presented is so differently. Now, it's everything to the fact that the shoes are wrapped up in cellophane.
Yeah, I do find that very weird.
In some sense, I can see it makes total sense because, again, these shoes are largely more expensive than they would be because it's the notion of, you know, buying like a malt whiskey, I guess. This shoe is from 07 and you can't get it anymore. And it's tapping into that kind of market. But then, you know, it's everything down to like the exposed brickwork, the fact that they have some art on the walls in the other half of the store. The really expensive stuff is behind a glass case that you can walk around. It is all very enticing because I remember when I lived in London with you for a bit, you know, we would talk about buying trainers and I would really scoff at the prices and be like anything over 60 quid was this exorbitant waste of money for something that was just going to get dirty on your feet. I'm looking at these trainers now, and I've already bought a pair that I think were about $145. Dollars with tax included.
You've changed.
I know. It's that notion of, it's the way something is presented to you, I think, is the important thing. And they're presented to you in such a way that you're kind of left thinking, no,
this is definitely worth $145. Yeah,
it's something you can invest in. It's not, you know, it is something. It's a notion that, and this will be a very niche reference, Gok Wan once made, that if you pay £100 or something and you wear it 100 times, you only paid £1 to wear it each time.
Yeah.
So if you wear these trainers 50, 100 times, you've only paid £2 a time to wear them, which doesn't sound that bad when you think about it like that. Debit card disagrees. But
I mean, yeah, ultimately, you know, people pay for coffee, those sort of things, and they will drink it. I will drink coffee very, very quickly, and they won't appreciate it in that time. But then, yeah, I see exactly what you mean. Who's the best style player in the tournament? I mean, you know, you sort of get to see the players as they walk out through the mix zone. Sometimes you will even get to go into the dressing room. Who's been the best styled guy?
I was quite impressed with Frank Lampard.
Really? Oh, that's interesting. Because, Frank's a bit like a fine wine, isn't he? He sort of gets better with age, so I'm told.
He does, and his cousin Jamie Redknapp was in attendance at the game against Philadelphia as well.
You see them side by side.
To be fair, they both look quite sharp. And, you know, that's the thing about Lampard in general. I think finally he's starting to settle here now. It's taken a while. I think you just see it, though, in the way he interacts with the media and the fact that he has a joke with them. And, again, it's a cultural thing of, I don't think he'll ever get asked a really difficult question or a divisive question or a question that could be misinterpreted as in the way that maybe used to happen in England. It could also be that he's in his late 30s, so he's that media trained and that comfortable with himself. He's never flapped anyway. Mm. But I just found it interesting watching him with the media scrum on Saturday and seeing how relaxed he was about the whole situation and how willing he was to have a joke and handle what was a difficult situation, which was essentially him and David Villa had an argument on the field, which was largely David Villa shouting at him and pointing at him on where things had gone wrong for them to concede two goals. But I think he just seems relaxed. He just seems comfortable.
Mm. And that's kind of nice. Especially nice to see someone sort of in a new environment, isn't it?
It is. I mean, he'll struggle to win over every fan at that club because for a large portion he was seen as unprofessional and someone who put them on the back burner. I completely see why those fans think that. I think they have a valid case for thinking that because he did choose Manchester City over them when he had been the marquee signing, the first guy through the door, so to speak. Will he ever win those guys? Probably not. I don't think he will. There's part of me, without wishing to sound like I'm throwing him under the bus, that thinks he doesn't really care. I think he's more focused on what he can do on the field rather than going out and trying to win friends. I think he knows himself. If they win an MLS Cup this season, if they go even remotely far, make the playoffs, he'll win fans that way. And it's difficult not to like the guy because he does seem like a very genuine person, even if he does struggle with this perception in New York of being slightly unprofessional.
Prediction for the game? Oh, don't make a prediction because that's horrible. I know we said this yesterday. Head says Argentina, heart says USA, doesn't it? It's that simple, really.
It does, but, you know, it's interesting you sort of talk about making predictions. I think that in itself, you know, I guess it's part of the business, and it's funny that today was Skip Bayless's last day with First Take. And so everyone on social media and even actually on the show themselves kind of trotted out his predictions that were less than impressive, like Johnny Manziel being bigger than LeBron in Cleveland and Tim Tebow and all this kind of things. And I'm not looking to defend Skip Bayless. I think he serves a role in sports media. It's maybe not the role that I want to serve. That's fine. We can coexist in that sense. I do think the notion of snapshot predictions as well, it's largely redundant. And I say that because if I take the England group as a great example, so I predicted Russia to come second. I predicted it, I think, just before Zagoev was out, just before Denisov was out. Again, after the Slovakia game, before any games had even kicked off, anything like that. And I appreciate why Wales fans for the most part, came at me and, you know, said I was an idiot and all this kind of thing, and laughed at the prediction. Again, it's a snapshot response in like 2 minutes based on the information you have at hand. It is a very crude science in that regard.
In that sense, it's not really a science, is it? It's more of a sort of prediction, and if anything, it's almost wrong that you're then held to that, because you're not. It's very difficult for you to kind of go, okay, well, I think it's going to be the goal is going to be scored in this minute. It's more predicting trends, and it's more of a sort of it'll probably, you know, if the team play to their full potential, then it can go like this.
Exactly. It's ifs, buts, and a lot of speculation. I think, you know, I was talking to someone yesterday about this, and I was saying, I think, ask me after 10 minutes and then let me predict something, as much to say that once the figurative chess game has begun, I can give you a better read on things. And then if I'm drastically wrong, fair enough, ring me out. I just wonder if we need to potentially move away from the notion of, okay, the groups kick off in 8 days' time. Tell us exactly how every single game is going to go.
Well, I mean, that is essentially it, though, isn't it? Is that people, you know, they want that vindication of I was right, or what they essentially want is one thing to be able to drop in to a conversation and say, well, you know, Slovakia have got this, or this, or this, or this, and have a little bit more of an idea of the men that are playing out on the pitch. I guess that's part of it. And to some extent, I still don't know if the media's nailed that. Chris, thank you very much for joining us on TF3. If people want to go find you, it's at @khenage, @khenage.
It is indeed, and Facebook as well.
Oh yeah, of course.
That's one that we're trying to expand, because I think I've got at least one or two more Facebook lives before the end of Copa America, and then next season I think I'll be doing them semi-regularly with Major League Soccer and the Premier League and such, because if there's one thing I think as well this tournament's taught me doing Facebook Live, is it's a really good way to interact. And I would imagine it will likely permeate its way into TF3 at some point.
Certainly so. If anyone is to be listened to behind the scenes, it's Dave and Chris. And those two do not stop bloody talking about Facebook Live. Yes, we'll see you again real soon on TF3, Chris.
Thank you so much for listening to The Front Three. Lawrence Day, it's been a pleasure. For now, where can the good people find us on the Twitters?
Twitters? Front Three. That's The Front Three. FRONT. Numeral three.
And also on Facebook, The Front Three.
I forgot about that. All and also Reddit. Out. Apparently Reddit's good.
Yes, do need to get over to Reddit, go and check it out. Guys, been a pleasure. Thanks so much for listening. Enjoy tomorrow's games, and we'll speak to you then.
Bye.
Goodbye.
Au revoir.
That means goodbye, but in French.
Arrivederci.
That means goodbye, but in another language.
Mario Gomez.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
Das Vidanya.
That means say goodbye. I'm going to score a load of goals on you.